What does it mean to be an equestrian? It's more than just being a fan of horses. It's the riders, coaches, owners, barn staff, grooms, and other support staff. But it's also the people, family, and friends who make up the whole equestrian team. And this podcast is for all of you. I am so excited to be here with you as we explore life in and outside of the show ring. I'm Tracy Mitchell, and I'm here to help you hit your stride. Hello, everybody, and a big welcome back to all of you horse enthusiasts. On this episode of Hitting Your Stride, I have with me today Maya Markowski. Maya is the owner of EQuest, a dressage training facility located in Guelph, Ontario. Maya and her then mount Lumiere competed successfully at the international level on the small tour, both in Canada as well as in the United States, where they were on the Canadian Nations Cup team twice. This pairing was also longlisted for the Canadian team in 2015. She has also competed numerous young horses in the FEI Young Horse classes with great results. And Maya is looking to make her Grand Prix debut with her more experienced mounts this year. Welcome, Maya, and thank you for taking the time to be here with me today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. My first podcast, so I'm excited.
That's awesome. I'm happy to give you that first time chance. So let's have a great conversation and have some fun. And so people get to know you.
Perfect.
I've known you now for probably, four or five years, I think. Yeah. You are very involved as a coach and as a rider and very active that way. And one of the things that I have learned is you are also very active outside of the show ring, looking to help promote and develop the sport. You are currently the vice president of the Caledon Dressage Association. So based on your current positions within the Caledon Dressage Association, which is not only vice president, but head of public relations and sponsorship, you may have a more comprehensive view of the sport in general. So using your firsthand experience, and like, what is your opinion of the state of the sport in Ontario, in Canada, and if you have any foresight sort of farther than that?
I'm pretty excited about currently our club. We made a big move a few years ago to Angelstone. We were located at the Orangeville Fairgrounds before that, which was a bit smaller. We were a little more limited to the number of horses we could have, and we had a lot of interest in our shows. And we decided to move to Angelstone, which is a beautiful venue, obviously. It's quite a lovely place to compete at. So that was a really positive move for us. It's going to allow us to really grow and hopefully, make our shows bigger, because we can take more entries. And now with Angelstone taking over operations of the Caledon Equestrian Park, which is another really lovely venue, it's kind of opened some doors for us to, maybe add some more shows to our list throughout the year, which I think would be great for the sport to have more opportunity to show at some of these really lovely venues. And we've been bouncing ideas around what we can do in the winter, because that's obviously a challenge here in Canada, is keep people motivated and riding through the winter months. So now with potentially an indoor arena at our disposal, that would be kind of nice to have some indoor shows. And obviously COVID is stalling some of the plans, but our board consists of a lot of dressage enthusiasts who really want to grow the sport, and we really are trying to make them accessible and affordable and provide a fun environment for people to show at and have a good time and enjoy it. And hopefully that will encourage more people to come out and compete and show and have fun. And I'm kind of excited what we can do with this and see where it goes. And we have a lot of talented riders. There we go.
Yeah, we're back. Oh my goodness, the fun of podcasting.
Technology.
Yes. So what I was going to say was, having access to the international, like these international facilities, is such a boost for you guys, you know, being able to promote and draw interest, like you said. Now, is the Caledon Dressage Association one of the bigger, like, is it the biggest one in Ontario, or how does it rank even in Canada?
I'm trying to figure out. We're not a huge club. I mean, we're just a non-for-profit organization that just started off with more of the silver level shows and have sort of grown over the years to hosting some more gold shows. And we're looking to do our first CDI this year. And so it's growing every year. And obviously now with these venues, it allows us to hopefully host some bigger shows. So sky's the limit. We'll see where it goes, but nice. Yeah.
Okay.
It's fun.
Well, I wish you guys luck. This should, I hope it's a good year for you.
I hope so.
So in order to develop a sport, it needs horses to develop. So you, I think this is awesome. Your current third level horse, who is now 7, his name is Radar. You guys found each other when he was just 3 months of age. I think that is awesome. What did you see in him at 3 months of age? What was it that caught your eye? And has he proven to be who you thought he might be?
Yeah, I wasn't actually even really looking for a horse at the time. I just came across his video online, and I just really liked the look of him. He had a really nice way of going. He moved through his body. He had this nice bounce to his gaits and a nice big butt, which I am a fan of in horses.
Even as a 3-month-year-old, he had a good, booty on him, did he?
He did. If I could show a picture right now, I would. He had a nice apple bottom. So I just couldn't stop thinking about him. So I drove out to Limoges with a friend of mine and looked at him, and he was everything he was on the video. And he just really, I don't know, I was very drawn to him. So I pretty much a day later owned him.
Nice.
And yeah, so he's turned out to be absolutely wonderful. He has a wonderful temperament. He really loves to work and really tries to please. So it's a lot of fun to ride him every day. And he's very talented. He's a bit of a teacher's pet, but it makes it a lot of fun to train him. So yeah, he's definitely a keeper for me. He's not going anywhere.
Awesome.
So yeah, he's definitely turned out to be the horse I was hoping, that's for sure.
Now, do you think having had him from such a young age and sort of bonding that way and getting daily hands-on and sort of seeing his personality, do you think that had that benefited you somehow as you got into that time where training started?
I think so. I mean, you can kind of teach them the way you like to train them. Like, I have done a lot of young horses myself, so I was able to really just start from nothing and teach him. I mean, he had a great start even from his breeder. They did a lot of stuff with him, so that was good for him in the beginning months. And but I like teaching them from the beginning and seeing them grow and develop. And it does make, you know, a good partnership when you've known them for that long. It can work the other way too. It's like your own child. They kind of get to know you and push your buttons. So, yeah. But I really like a Lumiere I had from a young age too. So
okay.
I like getting them young and watching them grow from the very beginning.
And almost imprint them somehow and really get that connection. But like you said, I've known of some horses that riders have had since they were young, and it can, with the wrong or right personality, depending you look at it, that can switch over pretty quickly. And the working relationship is hard to establish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. I'm lucky with him. He just likes to do it. So he's been pretty easy.
Awesome. Awesome. So what kind of, now that, you know, you know what you like in horses and obviously the goals that you have, what sort of traits, both in personality and physicality, does a Grand Prix potential dressage horse need to exhibit?
I mean, there's lots of, for physicality, there's always the conformation that can play a big role in their abilities later on in life. You know, you want a horse that has a natural desire to move uphill. I like a horse that really doesn't necessarily need to be a huge mover, but moves through the body. You know, you see the whole body of the horse move. Relaxation is a huge thing in dressage. So I really like a relaxed sort of way of going in a horse. The gaits can really be produced. I like obviously a big butt, and I also, I tend to look for like a, not too short of a neck, like that nice sort of high set neck that just comes out of the shoulder nicely. It does definitely help later on. But for me, a lot of it is personality. I have horses, different breeds, different sizes, you know, different conformation. They all have good attributes and conformation challenges, but when they have a great willing personality and they're a happy horse and they love their job, mm-hmm. it makes it much easier to train. So a horse like that for me is going to go a lot further and can overcome a lot of maybe not the ideal sort of conformation than a horse maybe that's built for it, but just doesn't have the desire to work. So I really am drawn to the personality of a horse, and, you know, obviously the physical characteristics are important too, but that's what strikes me first in a horse is their personality, their demeanor.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Not every horse is going to be blessed with those. I think I heard you say, you know, Velegro movements. And yeah. You know, so yes, you hope that your training and your influence on them can develop those movements. But yes, like the work ethic, the ability to kind of buckle down. Okay. Yeah. You know, all right, Maya, yes, I'm going to bust my big butt to make this work, and you know, we're a team and all that kind of stuff. So absolutely. And I know over the years, with the massaging, I've been in and out of so many barns, you know, with professionals as their coaches, I've witnessed a couple of horses where work ethic was just something that was not happening mm-hmm. for these horses mm-hmm. that had so much talent. And everybody's mm-hmm. kind of standing around scratching their heads going, what the heck do we do with these guys? And it was really unfortunate because they were bred to the moon, mm-hmm. but it just wasn't there.
Yeah, that can happen. I've, you know, had some that just don't seem to really enjoy the dressage. And then you go and jumps and they love it. So I think they all, you know, some of them just have a bit more of a preference. Dressage horses do have to take some pressure. Some don't like that. Mm-hmm. Some are anxious. I mean, my old quarter horse, I bought him way back when to be a hunter, and he hated jumping. It scared him. He was anxious. He was tense. And then he switched to dressage and he was happy as a clam. So
yeah,
so not always a rhyme or reason why they like what they like, but for the most part, mine are all pretty happy-go-lucky, so
that's awesome.
Like their job.
Yeah. Oh, that's all we can hope for, right?
Mm-hmm.
So knowing what is required in the horses, how do you transition to identifying similar requirements in the riders? So basically, how do you pair them off or fit horse and rider together? Do you find that to be a bit of a challenge?
Not too much. I really sort of have to figure out the rider's goals. So I have some riders who ride their horse on their own completely and they lesson once a week. Then there's some riders who want to go full steam ahead, full training, and they ride the horse. Some do half and half, or they'd like me to show the horse. So there has to be kind of a balance there when you're looking for a horse. So for example, if my student wants to ride the horse but wants me to show the horse, I have to find something that's, you know, suitable for the student, but also has those traits to maybe move up the levels and become, you know, a good show horse. Personalities have to mesh. That's a big thing. So, you know, you kind of want a horse that complements the rider. You know, certain riders everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. So I try and pair a horse that kind of complements maybe where the rider's weak, the horse is a little stronger. Where the rider's really strong, if the horse is a little weak in that area, you know, but the personality too is a big thing because they got to really enjoy it. And I don't want them to be overfaced with something that's too much. If someone wants to enjoy hacking, I need to make sure they have a horse they can do that with. Because at the end of the day, they got to really enjoy riding and, you know, look forward to riding their horse every day, not wondering what's going to happen today when I get on.
Yes. what scary thing am I going to have to react to with this
exactly.
one? Yeah. So one thing too, that you mentioned actually back and it sort of popped back into my mind, when you talked about dressage horses being under a lot of pressure, being a former dressage rider, and, you know, I absolutely love it and fully appreciate it. A lot of people might not really understand what it is you mean when you say that, because, you know, you watch horses jumping over 5-foot oxers and, you know, doing that. And it's definitely more of the known equestrian sport that everybody can relate to. So you'd mm-hmm. think those horses would be under more pressure because visually it looks like a greater feat. So can you share with the listeners what it is you mean, or what is it about the dressage horse at the upper level or in any level as they develop that experiences this pressure?
Yeah, it's a pressure. It's not to be seen as sort of a negative, but as the horse starts to learn self-carriage, change their way of going and their balance, there can be phases that, you know, they start to use their body in a different way. And for some of them, it can be a little bit challenging, or like we said, with conformation, you know, maybe one movement or something is a little harder for a horse. So they got to work a little harder at it. You know, I know when I work out and I get pushed to, you know, really use my muscles and I'm fatiguing, it can get a little hard. So they have to have sort of that desire to work through that a little bit. As a rider, you obviously have to know when it's enough, and sort of give them a break, but it's just sometimes in their whole way of going, like switching to third level for me is always a big jump for some of them, because they really have to start carrying their balance more on the hind leg and more uphill. And that can be hard for them. You know, it's not always easy for them. And learning how to use their body, it can be a little bit difficult, letting go of muscles, relaxing their back, you know, relaxing certain areas. Not all of them want to do that. So you got to just kind of keep working through that and figure out ways to help them in the most positive way, sort of overcome that.
Yeah.
Sort of exercises too. Like Lumiere took 2 years to learn how to do a flying change. He was a maniac.
Wow.
And he just did everything in his power to do everything but a flying change. And
wow.
And the flying change became the movement he's always scored the highest on. I would always giggle when I got my tests back and he'd get nines on his changes. And I mean, there were tears, there was sweat, there was a lot of doubt.
Wow. So what do you think switched for him?
Well, he's always been a little bit bossy. He's, you know, it was always in his head. It was never physical, but it was like, once I think I also had to figure it out too. I mean, it's not all the horse, the rider's got to also, you know, figure it out and ask properly and have them in the right balance. So I think, you know, it was just a little harder for him. So I had to really learn to set him up perfectly and mm-hmm. just keep at it. And once he started to get them, then all of a sudden they were easy peasy, but it took him a while.
Wow. That really building that confidence, working with that personality that's, you know, has their own, not agenda, but their own trying to figure things out. And talking about the pressure again with dressage horses, the mental pressure, I mean, for those mm-hmm. 7 minutes, however long they're in that ring at whatever level, because it's all relevant, that's a lot of mental concentration pressure that way. And I've always had a huge respect for the dressage horses that can handle that, because they have to be so controlled. Have mm-hmm. you ever experienced a horse that, you know, was so controlled for that 7 minutes, let's say, and then when they're done, like, have they just kind of like totally let down, or do they kind of explode as a release from that moment?
Well, you see some of them, like they go in these rings and they, you know, they go down center line and they are focused. I mean, they really learn. And that's what makes a great dressage horse too, is that they can just pay attention to you and let you ride them that whole test without getting distracted. And you look at some of these rings that these horses go in and they are pretty spooky looking. And, but then they, you know, finish the test, give the horse a long rein, and its eyes start bugging out of its head because now it's actually registering what's happening. So yeah, they can be, a lot of those upper level horses are quite spooky at the same time too, but they go, you know, once they go to work, they focus and they don't notice anything.
Yeah. The talent,
I've had some.
the talent and the energy is just so impressive. And like I said, something to be admired, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So this is a very short question, but it's a deep question. All right. You ready? What does Maya the rider bring to Maya the coach?
Well, Maya the rider, I'm always trying to get, you know, become better. I love learning. I never think you're done learning. Everybody should have someone on the ground helping. So I'm always striving to improve my riding with, you know, my coach or watching other riders. I like watching a lot of videos of great riding and horses. I learn a lot from that as well. So, you know, for me, the more knowledge and training I get, the more that benefits my students, the more I can offer them, you know, as a coach. I also, I understand the importance of being able to ride some trained horses too. So I do try and allow some of my students to get on some of my more trained horses and, you know, feel what a flying lead change is like and feel what, you know, they're trying to accomplish on their own horse. And I think by riding a lot, I've ridden a ton of different horses, different disciplines, different sizes, shapes, talents. It helps me really cater to all my students and their horses, you know, and what they're going through and devise training plans that help them and their horse in particular and really cater to that. So it, and then I can obviously get on their horses if sometimes things feel differently than what they look like. So it helps me to get on and ride their horse and feel what's happening. And then sort of, I always try and teach in a way how I feel it when I'm riding. So I really want to ride off what I feel. So when I teach somebody, you know, when I teach a half halt, I try and explain it in a way that, you know, they can kind of relate to the feeling or describe that feeling that I want them to get, which I find is very helpful for people when they're learning. So it's,
So communication is key. You being able to communicate, not only like, you know, like what's really hard is like you kept saying it, the feel. It's this kinesthetic communication that, you know, verbally being shared and stuff. So yeah, are you a natural at that, or has that something you've had to sort of develop for yourself?
Well, the feel, I think I've always had a pretty good feel for riding. I've developed a lot of it too over the years of just, you know, what's happening underneath you, why it's happening. So I definitely, you know, teach in a way that I feel like I'd want to be taught. You know, if I'm teaching you shoulder in and I just say half halt, you know, I want to know, why am I half halting? What am I trying to do with this half halt? The half halt can do a lot of different things. So I really try and teach in a way where they learn to also be able to do it on their own and problem solve and do all this stuff without me. You know, if you just say just half halt, well, why am I half halting? So I really try and teach it in a way where they can feel the results, and then down the road, they can really start to ride off, feel more on their own as well.
Nice.
They don't always need me there yelling at them.
Yeah, exactly.
positive motivational speaking.
Positive, yes. So, you know, communication with your clients, do you help them set goals, or do they come to you with goals, or is it a combination?
It's kind of a combination. I think people come with certain goals, but those goals can obviously change over time. And, you know, they might have one set of goals that they have with a certain horse they have, and then they move on and they end up with a different horse and those goals might change. So we are very, you know, communicative in that sense. So we're always chatting about what the plan is for the year. And I like to do that sort of verbally, person to person, and, you know, see that way. But I think goals can kind of change. And as their riding progresses, someone who may not, you know, think they want to show, all of a sudden they want to show, or didn't think they could do pre-St. George is all of a sudden buying a tail coat. So
that's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as goals change, you know, the mindset has to change and you have to be able to, as their coach, adjust to their little changes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they have to work hard, and they know that when you want to come out and you want to tell me I want to take this horse pre St. George, then you got to put in the time and the work and the dedication, and it's up and down. It's a roller coaster ride, dressage. Everybody knows that. One day you're winning, the next day you can't even trot. And it's like that for everybody.
Yes, you
know?
It is.
And I think that's important for people to know that, you know, they have challenges. I have challenges. There's weeks where things are great and I'm ready to show. And the next week I'm like, we're not going anywhere.
We're staying home.
Exactly. But you got to learn from that and just keep on trucking. And it gets better.
Awesome. Well, one of the really neat things I love about your journey as I've gotten to know you is that you actually started out in the hunter jumper ring. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like? Was that your first experience with horses? And how long was your interest in that discipline?
Well, I kind of started in the hunters because I think most kids seem to kind of go in that direction in Canada. So I did that for a while and I enjoyed it. And then I did move to Germany when I was younger. So got a little bit more into the jumpers as well. But yeah, that was a different experience where you do both. That's kind of where I learned dressage as well. But yeah, I really enjoyed the jumping. I just personally got to the point where I didn't want to jump those big, huge jumps.
I hear you.
I like to jump little things.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't quite for me. I'm not brave enough for that. I'll get on a bucking young horse, but I don't want to get on a jump horse.
So with that in mind, I mean, one of the first questions that came to mind is like, wow, okay. Because you often hear about jumpers who use tools and training from dressage. Mm-hmm. So my question is for you, can you share with us any skills you have developed from having had been in the hunter jumper ring and how training and competing in that discipline has benefited you as a dressage rider now?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it helps me, especially with my teaching, you know, when I do have students who do the hunter jumpers. So it helps me kind of teach them how to apply it to their course. You know, when you're doing a course, you know, when we're working on straightness and, you know, keeping the horse balanced through the turns, you can really kind of explain it to them, you know, and how they can apply that to their jumping. Because I also think that's really important that they take that flat work and really apply it to the jumping as well.
Yeah.
And it also is kind of, it's given me a lot of tools for my cross training with my own horses, you know, the Cavalettis and poles and all those exercises. It's, you know, I do a lot of that in the winter and I think it's really important. So it's given me kind of the tools to do that as well with my own.
No, that's fascinating. How many days in a week in the winter, or like how often do you incorporate the gymnastic part of jumping as a cross training as for your horses?
Well, I try to in the winter do something at least once a week. Sometimes I set up some poles and they're there for, you know, the week, and you kind of play with them in different ways, you know, each day, you know. So I try for the horse's mentality as well, just to do something different. And for me, like when you're inside all winter, it's kind of fun sometimes to just do some Cavalettis and poles. Not all my students who might be watching this agree with me because they see poles and they I won't mention any names, Rachel. it's neat. It gives me, you know, some ideas for what I can do with my dressage horses. Just as much as dressage is great for jumping, I think a little jumping every now and then is not that I'm really jumping. We'll just get that. It's cantering over Cavalettis.
Yeah. I mean, some dressage people, you even, like you said, you throw in anything that the horse has to quote unquote jump over and they just freeze.
Yeah.
But, you know, the step that is required to go over a Cavaletti or a pole is so important in developing steps of dressage. So I'm a firm believer that everything's got to meld. You should never be just one or the other. You should never be stuck in one discipline. It should be a really healthy crossover.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay. So I know that this, you have spent all day traveling and mm-hmm. you've been coaching in the Toronto area today prior to taking the time to be with me. And you spent most of, well, all day yesterday riding how many horses?
Yesterday I did four of them with Jackie.
With Jackie Brooks. So yeah, that those are not just easy, quick rides. and to mention the cold, wintry weather we have here in Ontario.
The hail.
Yeah. Hail makes it fun.
Thank you, Canada.
My question to you is, because I spend so much time in so many different barns and I overhear so many conversations, and I know for me, being a business person, owning my own business and a service business, that sometimes the self-care is such a hard thing to be committed to when you have so many responsibilities around you. And so what does Maya's self-care look like? What do you do for yourself outside of the show ring that might help prepare yourself for the show ring mm-hmm. mentally, physically, but like, what do you do for yourself when you're not thinking about horses that helps you be in a better place when you get to the barn?
Well, for me, it's tough. That's always a hard thing, is to balance the work. Because anyone in this industry knows, it's long hours. You're there from sunrise to sunset. And so it's definitely difficult. I try very hard to have time for Jeremy, my boyfriend. Yep. So I do have Sundays off. So I spend Sunday. I do not go to a horse show. I don't, unless I'm at a horse show, but no horses on Sunday.
Yeah.
And we're doing house renovations currently. So I like to do that. And and I like to try and take a week in the summer and have a little break and just go away with friends and
good.
Do that. I think that's important to kind of just, you know, relax and get motivated again and just kind of have a little downtime. I work out. I have a trainer who comes to the barn twice a week, and I work out and do cross training myself as well, because I think that's important as a rider to do that. So I enjoy that, and now I have some students who also are working out with him as well, so that's kind of fun. I like to try and golf and fish. It's important to do something that's not horsey. But it is hard. That's probably my weakness, and again, lots of people who know me keep telling me, take a day off. Go home.
I hear,
but I do love my job. So it's, I love it. So it's not like it's a hard thing to go to the barn every day, but it's definitely a balance that I got to work on. That's not my strength. Yeah, I'm a workaholic.
Well, I hear you. And I, you know, as much as we say, yes, you know, I've got to find a balance and I should be doing this more, it truly is difficult. And I know everybody listening will agree that when you love what you do and it's a passion, now, just because it's a passion doesn't necessarily mean for all business people that's something that works. But when you've got a barn full of animals that rely on you and you've got great clients that you're working with and you love what you do, it's so easy to say yes to that and no mm-hmm. to something that you might be currently needing in your life, which might be a day off or an evening where no one contacts you and you don't have to touch your cell phone. Right. It is, it's very challenging. And I don't truly know if we can ever find a balance because life is such an ebb and a flow, but it's really important to make sure that all of those areas are looked after in some mm-hmm. way and at some time.
Absolutely. It's, I'm not also very good at just sitting and doing nothing, so it's also hard for me. If I don't have something planned, I'm like, I just might as well go to the barn,
right?
But cell phones also make it very difficult. I try really hard to hide my cell phone or put it somewhere where I can't see it, because it makes it very difficult, and you're so available and accessible all the time now by cell phone. So that makes it more challenging too, but I do try my best.
And all we can do is, I mean, just hope that, you know, our clients, like with my massage clients and coaching clients, we have to establish boundaries, you know, mm-hmm. as you guys do. So that's the whole art of communication and understanding mm-hmm. as well. Now, I just want to go back to your workouts, because that's pretty awesome. You have your trainer come to your barn twice a week. Mm-hmm. So, like, does he bring a whole truckload of equipment, or what do you guys do?
Yeah, he has a bench. He has different weights. We have a ball, we have mats. So he manages to torture us just fine with all of that. Wow. We utilize, you know, for step ups, things like that, things at the barn. You can be a little creative, but, yeah, it's quite good. It's nice. And it's helpful for me time wise too, to get that in when he comes to the barn, because my days get a bit busy. So he comes in the afternoon and we work out outside, and yeah, it's fun. It's good. But yeah, he's very successful at making my muscles hurt with some weights and a bench.
Well, that's congratulations to you for that true commit. So you do this in the afternoon after you've ridden?
Yes.
See, a lot of people are like, no way, I've ridden 5-8 horses. There's no way I'm working out. I've already worked out. But yeah. I'm sure because this is something you've been doing consistently, you can feel that this different kind of exercise is actually making you better in your riding, right?
Yeah, for sure. It does help me, because it really helps you understand, like, feel different muscle groups too, what your lower back is doing. And just, it's kind of neat. It definitely does. I have really felt a difference. I mean, I've been working out with him for 7 years, so wow. It's obviously, I feel like it's benefiting for that long.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I definitely feel a lot stronger, and yeah, I quite like it, but I do better at the end of the day. I tried doing the 6 a.m. workout, and my muscles are not awake to do that. he can attest to that. And I was half asleep with coffee in hand. So I do much better after riding 8 or 9 horses and then work out.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Everybody's got their prime time. I know for I'm good between 10 and 2, you know, before I could do, but again, like you, not quite awake. After 2, I'm ready to kind of wind my day down a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. We all have our workout times. Mm-hmm. So this last question I have for you is a bit of a thinker, and you know, okay, so in 10 years, what accomplishments as a rider, and it could be 10, could be 5. I wanted something that was in the future. What, as a rider, what would you like crossed off your bucket list? And what would you like to be known for or remembered as in the industry? What kind of effect do you want to leave in the industry?
Well, for me, the biggest goal I have is I really want to compete for Canada at the Olympics one day. That's kind of my big bucket list goal. Obviously, any kind of international event would be a great thing to do. I just really would love to compete for Canada and, you know, do that on sort of the international stage at the Grand Prix level. So that's definitely my big aspirations at the moment. No pressure, Radar. my goal this year is to really officially make my Grand Prix debut in the show ring with Daedalus, who's owned by one of my clients that I've had since he was a 5-year-old and trained. So that's kind of this year's goal. I'd like to be known for someone who had a positive influence on the sport. I think it's important to give back. You know, I enjoy it, and I really would love to inspire people to start with dressage, you know, kids especially too. We don't have a lot of kids in dressage, so I'd like to be known for someone that has fun while doing it. You know, I promote and try to at home promote a really healthy environment for my clients, you know, drama free, support each other, don't knock each other down. You know, I think that's important. So those are kind of things I'd like to be known for, and hopefully a Canadian rider that gets a gold medal.
That would be amazing. And when you said that, I got goosebumps. So yeah, needless to say, I am rooting for you. And I have a client in your barn whose horse I go and massage, and I love going to your barn because
thank you. It
is exactly that. Like you said, it is drama free. It's very relaxed. everybody has gets like everybody's got a really good energy with each other. The horses are super content and happy. And I know that you're a serious believer in as much turnout time as possible. How do you find that affects them?
Well, they love to be out. I mean, they go out in the summer from about 8 till 8. And then in the winter, it's more like 8 till 4. They go out in groups, small groups. I mean, obviously you got to be careful at who you pair with who. So you do have to have a good ability to match them right so that everybody gets along, because that's always everybody's concern. But for me, they're great. They're quiet. They don't run. They're happy. They're relaxed out there. When they're in the barn, if you're in a stall all the time, for me too, it's like standing around and then trying to work out after you've been sitting on, around doing nothing. Right. So I think the movement is really important for them. And their brain, they're happy. They like to work because they're happy horses. And, we do all this cross training as well, don't drill them, let them be out. We hack, we try and really keep them happy as well. And in terms of the barn, I have a great bunch of clients. I'm very lucky, but we really support one another. Everybody cheers each other on and cheers everybody on, not just us, cheering each other, but they're all very positive towards everybody. They're always commenting on, posts on Facebook. And I'm really a stickler about that. I don't like the negativity and I don't understand it.
Exactly. What's the point, people?
I don't get it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like to be positive and just have fun with it. That's important. And then that affects the horses too. It's a relaxed environment to be in. So it helps the horses too to work.
Absolutely. And you know what? I can tell you that you're well on your way to having that legacy of everything you've just described, because anytime your name comes up in conversation, it is all about just how easygoing and, horse oriented Maya is, and how talented you are, and how good you are with young horses. And, people just, when you have clients, for a long time, because people are that committed to you, which is a huge feather in your cap. So,
thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Is there anything
you blushing?
Oh, well, there you go. Is there anything you would like to add?
No, this has been fun. I've really enjoyed my first podcast, and this is great.
Yes.
And I hope it was informative for people and fun at the same time.
Yeah.
Motivating.
Absolutely fun. You have a wonderful sense of humor, which I think everybody should have in life. You can't take life too seriously. You have to go with the flow.
Yeah.
And we might as well just share with people, as far as going with the flow, this is our third attempt at at recording this because the internet is just not wanting to behave. So yeah, this is
the best one for sure.
It is.
This was good. This version.
Yes, this is the best version. And sort of that goes to show you, right? You get knocked down, you just keep going. Yeah. And so this has been my first challenge podcasting. But so I can't thank you enough for
patience
and your commitment to doing this episode. So where can the listeners reach out to you? And whatever information you give me, I will put in the show notes for the subscribers. They can contact you if they'd like to get in touch with you.
Yeah, they can go on to my Facebook page, Equest Dressage, and they can message me on there. They can go on to my Instagram as well and message me there or follow me there. And I try to put lots of updates on there about horses and, all the different ones in my barn and what they're doing and some training progression and clips and whatnot. So they can do that, and that's where they can find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for this. And I hope you and your students have a wonderful show season.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So do I.
Thanks, Maya.
Take care.
So there you have it. For future episodes, I have some amazing interviews lined up hoping to open and engage the horse world on issues and topics of interest in and out of the show ring. So, until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. You can subscribe to the podcast for new episodes of Hitting Your Stride on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. You can check me out on Facebook and Instagram, and feel free to share whatever you've heard here with your friends. For that, I would be very grateful.